The Glittertint at Stein Erickson Lodge is a proud supporter of KPCW. The Glittertint restaurant offers regional American cuisine with Chef Zane Holmquist seasonal menus. Located mid-mountain at Deer Valley Resort, the Glittertint serves breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily. Sunday brunch with live music. Reservations recommended. 645-6455.
In the morning, and we're here again with film critic David Darcy and two of the people behind the film Green Prince. We have the director Nadav Sherman. Hello, Nadav.
Good morning.
And one of the central characters in the documentary, Ganin Ben Israq. And it's interesting sometimes that the central people in the documentaries, we call them characters. Like, no, you are a real person. It's a documentary, so you're actually real.
Well, yeah. I think that bringing that up, let's look at that more positively. When we talk about people in this documentary as characters, I think that what we are assuming is the kind of narrative momentum to this film that makes you. It reminds you that you're watching a great story, and these characters are what are driving it ahead. And it's quite a story. Just so for our audience who hasn't seen this film, Nadav, who was the Green Prince? Who is the Green Prince?
The Green Prince is actually the code name for Mossab. Mossab Hassan Youssef, who was still is the son of Sheikh Hassan Youssef, one of the most prominent figure in Hamas in the West Bank. And he was drafted or turned, depends how you look at it, to work for the Israeli intelligence, the Shin Bet. And he was operating for 10 years, passing on information, carrying out secret missions to fight terrorism. And Gonen, who's here with us today, was his handler. And the story of the film, The Green Prince, is the story of their very special relationship.
Yeah, the it was described last night at the screening of The Best of Enemies Became the Best of Friends. I mean, Ganin, is it an accurate description? And sort of what can you tell us what that means?
You know, we came from a totally different background. My father was a three-stars general in the Israeli army. He was fighting the Egyptians during the 73 war. He was fighting Syria and Lebanon during the First Lebanon War. And in 1985, he was actually in charge of the West Bank. At the time that Hassan Youssef, Sheikh Hassan Youssef, Mossab's father, was building the power of Hamas in the West Bank. So, you see, I grew up with a general. And he grew up with Sheikh that actually built Hamas. And each one of us, you know, took his ideology and studied his ideology at home. I became a Shin Bet handler. He started to be some kind of a Hamas member in the Kutle. Kutle is the student movement of Hamas in high school. And during that time, he wanted to do some kind of a terror attack. He was a very angry person. He tried to buy some weapons and attack Israelis. At the same time, I joined the Shin Bet, and my position was to capture people like him and stop terror attacks in the region. And this is, you know, this is the setup of our relationship. He was captured, he was arrested because he bought some weapons and they intended to make a terror attack. I was a handler. My mission was to recruit people like him. It was crucial to have information sources, what we call Yumint, This is the human information that you gather through people that have key positions in the terror organizations. And this is how our relation began.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've been hearing so much about the NSA and about computer-gathered intelligence. What's the value of HUMINT, and why is it so important, particularly in a smaller context where people are really, have declared their intentions to kill each other, to have this kind of intelligence? What's the value of that?
Today it seems, and I remember as an intelligence officer, we had all the time some kind of competition between the SIGINT, all the electric information that you gather, either phone calls or whatever, emails, and the HUMINT. And it seems like the last decade, or the last 10 years, sorry, SIGINT is very important because you have networks, and HUMINT is less important. But actually, without HUMINT, you cannot really understand the intentions, the motives. And you can have all kinds of information. If you don't have someone inside to tell you what it means, you understand nothing. I remember one time we had an operation in Armala. During this operation, we got a secret, something that looked like a secret message, and a very high-profile terrorist sent a message to another high-profile terrorist telling him, bring 7-Up. And all the agency, the Shin Bet, was crazy. People said, okay, 7-Up, it means 7 terror attacks that are going to be carried and so on. And, you know, I looked at it and said, you know, it doesn't look good. Let's try to understand. And I started to ask people around. You know, you ask your agent, your sources, what's going on. And one of them said, you know, there is this guy, this terrorist, he goes to a certain place and he is crazy about 7-Up. And the 7-Up was 7-Up. It wasn't terror attacks.
Yeah, right. So. Right. Well, as Sigmund Freud said, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar.
Right. Right.
Now, Nadav, how did you find this story? And how did it take any – I mean, first of all, there's a third person in this, the Green Prince himself, who was supposed to be here today. Why isn't he here? Who is he? And he's a little troubled by this, or
– I don't know. Any security concerns, or was he just hard partying last night or something?
No security concerns. No, I think it's just been very overwhelming. Listen, we premiered the first day of the festival – which seems like a month ago, but it was just, 36 hours ago. So we all flew in, and we had an incredible premiere. You know, Gonen and Mossab got standing ovations. 8 hours later in the morning, we had our second screening. Again, they got standing ovations. They did Q&As. We've been doing interviews all the time. And we had a third screening last night. And I believe it's a lot to take. And I think also to see, it's a very personal story. I mean, you've seen the film, you see how personal it gets and how emotional it gets. And I think that just, just the overwhelming attention that he's been getting, since he arrived, it's a bit too much. And I think he needed a bit of a rest.
Certainly. Yeah.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Now, to your question, David. So, Mossab wrote a book, and when I'd read this book, first of all, for me, it was sort of an eye-opener about Hamas, because I was living in Israel at the time, and Hamas had won the election. They were our neighbors. All I knew about Hamas is that they were, a social political movement, but they were also a terrorist organization. But I realized we didn't know much about Hamas, and I thought it was crazy. These are my neighbors, it's like Mexico for Americans, and we don't know the first thing about them. And Mossab's book, gave an inside perspective, and I thought that was fascinating. And then, to one of our sessions, I met Gonen. And when I understood the nature of the relationship between Gonen and Mossab, as you said, the best of enemies who become best of friends, I remember that meeting really well, I was instantly filled with hope. And that's not something that you get in your everyday life, And especially living in that region. People are trying to make peace all the time. They're talking. But you know what? It's not happening. They don't trust the leaders, the Palestinian leaders and Israeli leaders. They don't trust one another. Without trust, there is no peace. There is no hope. And when I understood the relationship between Gonen and Mossab and how much hope it gave me, and I see this here at Sundance, every single screening, you know, after screening, when Mossab and Gonen come on stage, first of all, everybody gets up and applauds, people have tears in their eyes, and they talk about the great hope that this brings in a situation which seems hopeless, how these two individuals can connect. So then, you know, I met Gonen, and I was instantly, you know, just understanding the nature of the relationship made me want to do this. You know, I felt that I had to carry this message and to show, look, things are possible if people sort of trust one another. And then I flew to America to meet Mossab. We met in New York, and I remember that day really well because I flew in and I was waiting for him in a hotel lobby. And as I was waiting for him to arrive, they had just announced that Osama bin Laden was assassinated. And first of all, everybody was glued to the screens. This was big news. And within 3 minutes of this announcement, Mossab walks into the lobby. And he was, like, really excited. He's like, did you hear the news? And I was like, yes. He's like, we got to go to ground zero. Within 5 minutes of meeting the son of Hamas leader, I was with him in a taxi going to ground zero, where America was celebrating as if they had won the World Cup in football or something. Everybody was screaming, America, America. And Mossab was there, and he was really trying to participate in this exhilaration. And I found that fascinating because 2 years before, he was, you know, a Palestinian, yes, an undercover agent, but he was deeply rooted in Palestine. And because he had gotten asylum in America, he was trying to find a new community for himself and really trying to fit in and now celebrating. And this is a man who 10 years earlier would have, you know, cheered for the missiles flying onto Israel, for example, you know? So the transformation was so great. And I, you know, just meeting Gonen and Mossab, you know, made me want to do this.
Yeah. Was as when he was a loyalist with Hamas, were they staunch allies of Al-Qaeda and bin Laden? You
know, I don't know. Well, Hamas is an offshoot of the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood. I don't know what their relationship is with Al-Qaeda at the time. But you know, they're opposite sides of the fence of where we stood, or standing still.
Yeah. During the filmmaking, how often were the three of you together in making the film?
Well, we were together, I would say, for half of the shooting. I mean, you've seen the film, so it's composed of very stylized interviews with Mossab and Gonen, but we were there at the same time. And we actually had one afternoon, which was actually quite interesting, where Gonen was interviewing Mossab. They took my chair, and Mossab was interviewing Gonen.
Gonen, you know, speaking of relations between, you know, handlers and prisoners, what about the relationship between documentary subject and director? I mean, did you have to establish a certain amount of trust and, like, what's this guy, you know, want to do?
Is it
here?
Like handling?
Yeah.
Well, actually,
did you feel handled?
Nadav, this is a very good question, because actually I found myself in the opposite place. Nadav was handling me. It's almost exactly like a handler and a source. This time I was the source and Nadav was the handler. But I'll tell you, it is something that without full trust, I couldn't do it. And I remember the first meeting with Nadav. We were sitting in Tel Aviv. He started to ask me some questions. I felt that his questions came from a very understanding point of view. It wasn't just, you know, you can take this story to many places. You can think about the action, to ask about what you did, what kind of operations. This is something very sexy, you know. We can talk about what we did. Nadav understood something very deep in the story. And from that point on, I just knew that Nadav is maybe the only one that can really take the story, because I wouldn't do it, you know. I wouldn't talk about it. It's not something, you know. I didn't have any urge to go and tell the story to anybody, because this is a very personal story, and there are still open ends in the story. So it was very hard to talk about it.
Now, when you're in Shin Bet, which is Israeli intelligence, are you allowed – the encounter with Nadav took place after you had left Shin Bet. Is that right?
Yes.
What are the rules? We have all sorts of rules for people in intelligence about talking to other people about what they do.
Well, here in America, after they leave, they usually publish everything online, right?
this is very problematic because there's another film here called Last Days of Vietnam, which was detailed in extreme precision by Frank Snepp, who was in the CIA and who was, as you'll see in the film, trying to plan a more or less organized withdrawal, which of course fell apart. You'll see this if you have time from your interviews to do anything here. And the book came out, but he was sued by the government, and this is still a big discussion. But in Shin Bet, are you allowed to say anything while you're still an employee? And how does that – after you leave, are there still restrictions on what you can say?
Of course, that while I'm on duty, I'm not allowed to talk with anybody except the agency. And this is a very, very strict rule. You understand why. It's reasonable. Let's say that – you can say a relationship of a Shin Bet agent or handler with a journalist is worse than his relationship with the Russian agent, okay?
That's treason.
It's treason to have any kind of relationship with a journalist. Now, when I leave the agency, I'm still under a very strict rule that says, basically, there is Section 19 of the Shin Bet law that says that I'm not allowed to talk about what I did during the time I served in the Shin Bet. Today, coming out, talking on this documentary about my relationship with Mossad, someone can say that I just breached this law by not getting any permission from the Shin Bet. But first of all, we're talking about our relationship. Yes, you know, the setting is what happened during the time we served the Shin Bet, but we are talking about a personal relationship. And I think that after the gatekeepers, when I saw that there is the gatekeepers...
Tell people what the gatekeepers was. I think our audience might not know.
The gatekeepers is a documentary.
It's a very good documentary.
It was here a year ago.
Yeah.
By Dror More, this is the director. He interviewed five of former heads of Shin Bet. They are talking about what happened during 30 years of Shin Bet work in the West Bank. In this documentary, those people are talking about decisions that they took as former Shin Bet leaders.
Yeah, they're talking about also the process of decision-making.
And the process of decision-making.
Yeah, and the film was nominated for Academy Awards last year. The big difference, you got to say, between the gatekeepers and the Green Prince, forgive me for cutting in, is that the gatekeepers, you know, these are very powerful people who were running the Shin Bet, this intelligence agency, but they were sitting behind their desk. And they were basically, in the film you see, you know, they're going back and saying, we should have done this, we should have done that, and they're full of regret. Whereas Gonen and Mossad were two people in the field who actually risked their lives and took decisions for what they believed in. They risked their careers. They lost everything. You know, Gonen lost his job. He was thrown out because of the decisions he made. Mossad lost all his family. He lost his identity in a way. So they had a very strong moral compass, which they acted on. And the gatekeepers, these people didn't act on them. They also have a strong moral compass. They didn't act on it. They stayed within the system. So this, for me also, it is very important to point out, the Green Prince is not only about Palestinians and Israelis. It's about two people who understand or will come to the conclusion that the system they operate in is wrong, and they actually take the bravest decision to step out of it. Now, you could be working in a bank or a radio station or a supermarket and go to a weekly meeting, and the boss says something which you don't agree with, and you could either shut up and keep your job, or you can speak up and risk losing your job. These are two people who speak up.
We've seen, but what is happening is that a number of films are calling in Israeli intelligence and the Israeli mission of this adversarial relationship with the Palestinians into question. We've had Room 514, The Gatekeepers, Omar. Why are these films happening now?
Well, listen, conflict breeds drama. Drama breeds films. You know, one of the reasons you have unbelievable films coming out of Israel, of the whole region, is the conflict. The conflict creates a lot of human drama.
But you live in Germany, right? Why not live in Israel? Why are you?
Well, I share my time between Israel and Germany, but it's circumstantial. I'm just, you know, doing projects in Germany at the moment.
Yeah, and and films breed the screening schedule. So for Nadav and Ganin, I've got to tell the audience that the next two screenings for your film in this area, Wednesday at the Redstone Cinema in the afternoon, and next Friday, 3 p.m. at the Temple Theater. So those are your next two chances to see The Green Prince. And Ganin and Nadav, thank you very much.
Taking Shin Bet to a synagogue in Park City. The temple is a synagogue that's been repurposed during Sundance, as everything in this town is, for films. So good luck.
Thank you very
God
much.
God bless. God bless.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for coming to
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Alpine Apothecary, individually tailored prescriptions, customized skincare, supplements. Visit Historic Park City and experience the main attraction, historicparkcityutah.com. Park City Meat and Provisions Butcher Shop, now open in Prospector. Peterson Calder Real Estate, Prudential, Utah, selling Park City since 1989. Experienceparkcity.com. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you. Additional funding for KPCW has been provided by Right at Home, 1745 Bonanza Drive, furniture and home accessories consignment. Gallery Mar, fresh contemporary art on Main Street, gallerymar.com. Park City Gynecology, Park City Metasthetics, Women's Healthcare, Age Management, 435-214-5335. Rally Interactive, makes apps, websites, and other digital products. Rallyinteractive.com, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.